Bye-bye.
Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
We will preview the Cubs-Cardinals series because we will be on right before the pregame of the Cubs-Cardinals series gets underway. And I imagine we'll find some time to react to today's finale of the Blue Jays-White Sox series. Maybe. Maybe we'll do that. Maybe we'll just completely ignore it. I'm not sure. It all depends on how I feel. But I'll be here and Ray will be here, so that's a good thing. The people that are taking care of you for the next few hours are here too. Parkins and Spiegel. Hello, boys.
Hello, Lawrence. Yeah, we are here. And we will be on during a White Sox day game. And about 78% of the time that we're on, it's an unofficial stat, during a White Sox day game, something horrible happens. Yeah. So
that is the case.
It's it's fine. It's fine.
It's science.
It's an exact stat.
It's rapidly approaching the, well, they are just kind of what they are season. It's rapidly approaching that point. Not quite there in full, but you can see it from here. And it's not a good place to be.
Not very pretty.
No. I heard you talking about Alek Manoah and the splits and whether handedness should matter. He's just really, really good overall anyway. So that's why you could argue. I mean, there's no way that Vaughn should hit seven. That's ludicrous.
I'm trying so hard to understand the logic of it. And I'll grant you. You want to put the bad lefties out there for handedness sake, and maybe they do see the ball better. Okay, but there's no reason to bat Andrew Vaughn seventh.
Right, and he's got Robert second, right? And he said he wanted to split him up, so he's got five spots in between.
Yeah.
That's a lot of spots.
You split him up. I feel like you should probably put them together.
Yeah, or you could put like a couple guys in there, but you know, whatevs. But Manoah, man, Manoah's like a hits per nine demon. He's allowed 6.8 hits per nine. I have this fancy chart that Mike Petriello, the baseball stat guy from MLB.com, the guy who works with Benetti on the StatCast broadcasts, he put together for Beat the Streak purposes, and it's like the lowest percentage of plate appearances by pitchers that resulted in a hit of any kind. It's like this fancy baseball savant search.
Cool.
Yeah, sounds fun, right? up your alley. Alek Manoah is fourth since the beginning of last year.
Oh,
last year and this year. Like, in terms of pitchers who don't give up hits, that guy.
I mean, that's probably a bad matchup for a team that doesn't hit.
Team that doesn't hit versus pitcher who doesn't
give allow hits.
Yeah, it's tough.
I'm just checking your math on that. Yep, get the same. Big underdog.
What's the number?
Blue Jays are minus 185 favorites.
Give you every perspective. Every perspective on the game right here.
That's right.
And then the game starts and we're on our own.
And then it basically doesn't matter. Yeah, but, you know, Johnny Cueto, he's been good.
Yeah, I got the feels like not a good matchup.
Living on borrowed time.
Yeah, and I think, I said that to Stoney, I think that he's already paid for himself. The three starts that he's giving you, he's already paid for himself. But this feels like the type of lineup where you make a mistake in the zone and you look up and it's 4-1 or something like that.
You know, I didn't check the exit velocity on the Vlad home run.
Oh, my God.
But I do know that by the time anybody, like whether it was Benetti or Dan Schulman on the Toronto call, there's a deep drive to center and it's gone.
Yep.
Like, it was fast. And, like, you know, center field, Engel turns around, looks at it, and
it gave it the cursory look to see, well, maybe it's low enough that it'll play off the wall.
And then it's back over his head, bouncing towards second base, just like that.
Yeah.
That was quick.
That was not great yesterday.
I didn't know this wrinkle of traveling to Toronto, that the White Sox are taking a bus to Buffalo after the game to fly to Tampa from Buffalo, so that because if you leave Canada by ground, you don't have to provide a negative COVID test.
Yeah.
But if you leave Canada by air,
you have to test negatively.
So they're circumventing the exit COVID test to go to Florida by flying out of Buffalo and crossing the border by bus. That is not the first team to do that. The Yankees did it. The Red Sox did it. And it's basically, well, we'll bring COVID back into the country, but we can't afford to miss any of these baseball games.
I found an article, Danny, on the Buffalo News from a month ago. Here's your headline. Unexpected hub. Buffalo Airport plays key role in pro sports transportation.
It sure does.
God, are we stupid? Like, I mean, at this point, obviously, people, we are just living with it, and you're either vaxxed or you're not vaxxed and all of that stuff. So, I'm not up in arms about it, but it's funny that how arbitrary it all is. Yeah. Cool. Go play. But just, you got to get there by bus.
Oh, yeah.
And
man.
Then an airport. Instead of just an airport.
Yeah,
it's insane.
This is the problem with people. We ruin kind of any attempts to do certain things for our own safety. I remember when I was in Mexico earlier in the year and I saw people lined up to get the test results for their COVID tests before they could leave the country. And I saw people with cash, like getting ready to bribe if
That's
they
good.
Must. Yeah, that makes you feel good, right?
Oh, it's just an asymptomatic COVID. Let me on the plane with the olds and the six. It's insane.
Yep.
Here's 100 pesos.
The six.
Well, you know, I didn't want to take your limpers. You call them limpers. Whatever they are.
Yeah, whatever they are.
It's just crazy, man.
Everybody's got their own thing.
So the exit velocity on the Vlad Guerrero home run.
Yeah, was it
hard?
It was 111 miles per hour.
Yeah, it seems good.
The launch angle was only 19.
Yeah, it didn't need much launch angle. It was rising. It was rising as it left. It was a towering line drive.
Oh, my God.
That's right, a towering line drive.
That is not good. That is not good.
NBA Finals, though, tonight, man.
NBA Finals tonight.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, there's NBA Finals tonight. I haven't caught up on the latest episode of Kenobi, so that'll be something I can do later on tonight. Yeah.
Anyone picking Boston?
I haven't bet on this yet, Danny. I actually kind of like Boston in this series. I think they have a good defensive matchup with Marcus Smart on Steph. And it's rare that one could say that there's a good defensive matchup against Steph.
Yep.
But I like their matchup, and they've just been through a meat grinder of a series where outside of game six, they didn't flinch. So I understand why people would pick Golden State, but I think I'm rolling with Boston. What about you?
I like Golden State. They're healthier and getting guys back, right? Like Gary Payton could play in the series. Iguodala could play in the series. Otto Porter could play in the series. So they're crazy rested. And there's something about Boston that everyone's talking about. Well, they went through Brooklyn and they went through Milwaukee and they went through Miami and like how tough the road is. But man, like,
it's a really tough road for Golden State, I think.
Yeah, I agree with you, but also like the guys were injured. Like you went through Milwaukee without Middleton, and you went through Miami with guys, three of their top four players either missing games or banged up in the series, and they went to seven. You know, it's not like they got through the East comfortably when they were the healthier team. Like I know Smart missed a little time, and I know they weren't perfectly healthy the entire time, but certainly compared to like Tyler Hero or Chris Middleton, you know, being out for stretches of those series, they were the healthier team.
I hear you.
And they went the distance. So that plus home court plus health makes me lean Golden State. So
I lean Golden State because of the beauty and the improvisation in that offensive style. It's so special, and it's obvious they can do things that other teams cannot do because they have those shooters and because they have a guy in Draymond who's so skilled and so uninterested in getting himself any shots whatsoever. But they improvise so much on offense that even a team that's as great defensively as Boston is, how do you prepare for something that these five guys and Steve Kerr haven't mapped out for you yet. They just kind of flow. Like, the way that they do it is so unique.
They play jazz.
They do, man. And it's a beautiful thing. And with Clay healthy and shooting like that, and Steph smelling it and playing like he has, and Poole off the bench, I don't think you can defend them well enough, no matter how good your group connectedness is, and Boston's is. I don't think you can defend them well enough to keep them from outscoring you.
Zach Lowe said it might be the best defense since the 04 Pistons, though.
That's really cool.
So if there is a defense that could do it, it's the defense with three different guys who got Defensive Player of the Year votes, that's crazy athletic, that's great at switching. I'm with you. Like, I think the motion offense, right, of the Warriors is clearly much more sophisticated than the pick and roll style offense that Milwaukee and Miami are running.
Right, it's so difficult to prepare for.
It's very different,
and it's
Boston has beat them. Like, they have a winning record against Golden State over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and they beat them.
They have beaten them.
I think they beat them once when Horford was playing, and lost to them once when Horford wasn't. And Horford is playing out of his mind right now, and is a really key part of that because he's a four who can switch. Right?
Yeah.
He's a four who can switch and get out there for the most part. But I don't know, man. Like, Golden State, they know how to win, and just the way that they play is so beautiful. Can't wait to watch it.
I can't wait to watch it either. I think it should be awesome. It should be a good series. To argue Lawrence's side, I don't know that Golden State has an answer for Tatum. Like, Wiggins is a great athlete, but he's not.
Not as big, not really strong. Yeah,
and
you got to be strong.
And I think you need someone to defend him that's going to be physical with him. You know, I think that's when Miami had success. It was because they were being physical and they were trapping on him. So you got to figure out someone to be physical with him if you want to try and knock him off his game. And even that might not work. Or it could work to a degree, like it did in portions of Game 7. And then he could go on a tear.
We're going to get Iguodala, the LeBron stopper who kept him to only a triple-double and then won NBA MVP. Finals MVP. We're going to get Iguodala coming off injury to play.
If he's healthy enough, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know how.
Because that'd be the guy you put on him, right?
Well, 6 years ago, yes.
Right.
He would have been the guy that you put on him.
I still can't believe that Finals MVP vote.
That's why Steph doesn't even have to be that good to win it.
The reports were that he didn't get a vote. That doesn't make any sense. That the league MVP, who went 26-6-5 in the finals, didn't get a single vote.
Like, that's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so crazy that it seems unbelievable. Which is my guy Nick's conspiracy, that the voters got together and because there's so few people, I think it's like 11 people who vote, that they got together and they just like kind of voted on who it was going to be so that the MVP didn't go to LeBron on the losing team.
So do they get in a room and just one guy stands up and advocate? Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's the NFL Hall of Fame. I get confused.
Right, it's very confusing.
Dan Pompey stood on a box and said, damn it, it should be Andre Iguodala. No.
But it's got to be a ridiculous thing. Like, Steph was the best player on the Warriors in that series, pretty clearly. He doesn't have a Finals MVP. Steph Curry, who has been a unanimous league MVP and has multiple championships in his 6 finals appearance in 8 years, doesn't have a Finals MVP.
Yeah, this will be a moment, and this will be a couple weeks to remind us of just exactly how good he is, how legendary he is, and how he has changed his game and continued to evolve. The wide array of floaters and in-between options he has, how he can finish at the rim, how much stronger he is compared to what he used to be, let alone, remember when the ankles just wouldn't stay healthy?
Yeah, he went between the ankles not staying healthy and then the hand not staying healthy. It's kind of weird, right?
Yeah, you know, there's been so many dudes who are like, well, that guy can shoot. You know, I wonder if he could ever find a way to last. And Steph has turned it into, you know, obviously a Hall of Fame career, and he'll be remembered as the greatest shooter of all time, but he's so much more than that. So much more.
I mean, where would you guys say, like, if I was going to say he's a top X player in NBA history, like, where would it be? No, that's ridiculous on Steph Curry.
Ridiculously low?
Like, ridiculously high. You know, like he's...
They were having this conversation over the last couple of weeks of where... I forgot who did the ranking, but I think Steph is 11th or something like that.
Yeah, that feels about right. I mean, I was about to blurt out top 10, and I paused for a moment. He's so special and so unique that I'd like to see him in the top 10 because it feels worthwhile to have a player who represents what he represents and is as unique as he is in the top 10. But I'd feel fine top 15.
Yeah, I mean, I think he is top 15. If he gets a fourth title, it'd be four titles, two MVPs, presumably a finals MVP.
And he changed the geometry of the game.
Yes.
Correct. Well, right. Yes.
Those are things that we talk about with Kareem.
Absolutely.
When we make the argument about Kareem being the best player of how he changed it, I think you have to add that into the argument for Steph Curry.
Yeah, the thing I always like to point out, Lawrence, is that Trae Young was like a 13-year-old watching Steph on Davidson when he won at Oklahoma. And Trae was like, oh, okay, I can do that. And then became Trae Young.
Yeah. You know? A transformational figure who also, like, you do these arguments in different ways, right? You can do them based on, like, longevity or whose peak was the highest. I mean, Steph's peak, the only guy ever to win unanimous finals MVP. 2016, he had a 50-40-90 season, was the scoring champion, was the MVP. I mean, and got every single vote. Like, he's one of the greatest basketball players.
Well, not
of
finals MVP, regular MVP.
A unanimous regular season MVP.
Yeah, that's good.
No split vote in a 50-40-90 year where he led the league in scoring.
That's pretty strong.
It's pretty amazing. Yeah. Like, it's a pretty amazing.
I'll take that on my team.
Yeah,
yeah,
good.
Right, exactly. So,
it just reminds me a lot of my intramural basketball heyday, you know.
Yeah,
at Emerson, say, right?
What was the name of the team?
Alpha Pi Theta. It was my fraternity theme, fraternity team, and theme. The theme was the team. But
yeah, between the two of us, I think the audience would get it wrong that you were the frat guy.
It's probably true. It was a unique fraternity at a very unique and eclectic school, but still, yeah. It is what it is, and. I hit a game winner, Lawrence. You know, I don't like to talk about
North
it much.
North Shore Winnetka frat boy.
Not me.
Not Winnetka, not in a frat.
Right. Other than that.
Glencoe in a GDI. Thank you.
Hit a game winner in the first round, Lawrence. Coach who was, you know, using the clock. There was no official clock. He just had it on his
little four corners, yeah. Little Dean Smith.
Yeah, you know, and it was just a big moment. And it's why I can connect with some of these guys. Like,
hold
you talk
on,
about
hold on.
Steph.
Walk us through it. Oh. Let's talk about this play. Let's diagram and break it down.
Okay. Well, Mike Coates, the living
You're what
legend.
We call him enabler, yeah. Lawrence.
Mike Coates, the guy we called the living legend, he had the ball. He got trapped in the corner, and he passed it out to Tommy D. We called him the enforcer. Okay. And then they found me. I was the round mound of rebound, of course. And I had an open elbow jumper that I had the stones to take as the coach was counting it down. We were down one to the guys from the mailroom. I mean, we were going to lose to the mailroom guys. You can't have that in the first round of the intramural playoffs. And my shot went down. Very exciting. Everyone stormed the court. Everyone, I mean, like the 6 to 8 people in attendance and my own team.
What was the final score on that game?
Oh, boy, I don't remember. I maybe 28, 27.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Something like that. I can tell you
14
that
to 12.
We had another game 2 hours later, but the between games frosty at Wendy's never tasted so sweet.
Oh, I can imagine. Did you go fries in the Frosty?
Oh, as always, man. Quarter pound double stack fries and a Frosty, which I believe is the celebration meal of champions.
Of kings.
Don't you?
Yes.
Between playoff games and intramurals? Absolutely.
Yeah. Chad Johnson, famously, big McDonald's on game day guy.
There you go.
Right, so you're just like Chad Ochocinco, Steph Curry, Matt Spiegel.
Yeah.
He actually met up with Zach at a McDonald's before a Bears-Bengals game.
Like, intentionally?
Yeah.
Like, hey, Zach, let's hang out?
Yeah, like the Bears and the Bengals were getting ready to play, and I think he had, like, Zach had made mention of something with Chad, like, on Twitter, like that. I guess that'd be a fun, like, score story for you guys at some point. But, yeah, he went out and had, like, breakfast at McDonald's with Chad Ochocinco before the Bears and the Bengals played.
That's awesome.
Was it before the
That's
game?
That's great.
When Chad Ochocinco just kept going right down the middle and destroying the Bears with the deep middle play, just beyond the outstretched arms of Brian Urlacher.
I mean, it may have been the game where Sedmin went crazy on them, too.
Oh, God, yeah.
That was he was fantastic in that game.
Rest in peace, Marion Barber.
Yeah,
man.
I heard that yesterday. It was terrible. Very disappointing. Oh. I found him to be in being in that locker room with him. I found him to be a really interesting person. Like one of those guys where you pull up a microphone and you want to talk to him about like the game, and then you go, "Oh, this is someone who's thinking beyond the game."
Wow. I never had the chance to meet him or know him on that level. I loved the, you know, it feels terrible to say in retrospect, but I loved the running style. I loved how hard he ran in college.
Yeah, him and Lawrence Maroney.
Him and Lawrence Maroney at Minnesota. And then he had a huge year in Dallas where he had almost 1,000 yards and went to the Pro Bowl. And then it didn't go so well here, obviously, and there was a famous mistake and stuff like that. But he ran with so much power and so much force, but there's so many mental issues and mental health issues over the last 4 or 5 years. It's one of those things that like you look at and you're like, oh yeah, that's right. This sport that we love is freaking brutal and mean and takes lives away.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you have to feel badly about loving the style in which he played in. You know what I mean? Because guys who didn't play that style also get sick and have CTE and have mental health problems. It's such a brutally...
But doesn't it feel...
Of course it feels...
In retrospect, feel like, you know, that guy who led with his head, I loved that guy.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I just... He was playing his style of football.
Yeah.
It's just the game is inherently dangerous. Guys who had all of the collisions in the world, some of them have absolutely no problems and live into their 80s, and guys who were like, I think I had one concussion, end up with terrible CTE. It's just, it's an awful sport. And now you have to, but it's my favorite sport, and yeah, we love it because of it. And I will say, it does feel cleaner now to root for it, that all of the science is at least out there, and the NFL's acknowledged it, and they've paid the settlement and the players are aware of it.
Yeah, because there was a time when like the information was being kept from those guys,
right? And that was you know, big tobacco, right? that was
yeah.
When and it was like when the media knew and it was being reported by like the scientific community, and the NFL was still in denial and they were in the litigation. That was less than a decade ago. Like that was a real terrible time for football. But now it does feel,
it feels like there. I mean, we can say like, oh, well, there is informed consent
right
now. Like it allows us to alleviate that moral conundrum.
Yeah. You know, I remember all those conversations during that time you're talking about, Danny, when we would say, well, you know, one day there'll be a waiver. There'll be a waiver that you sign and then you play the game and that's what it is. So there is the equivalent of that, at least sort of conversationally. Now, like, is the NFL, they're not opening themselves up to potential lawsuits on the back end because of everything that they've admitted and what they're trying to do.
And the settlement. Yeah, I don't think that exists anymore for the NFL. And yeah, it is a little bit of a cop-out for us who just love football. And like, okay, now they know. And so if they know, then we can be okay with it too, because presumably they're okay with it. Do you think White Sox fans would have liked that to be... Andrew Vaughn at the plate, either with Gavin Sheets or Yasmani Grandal when the bases were loaded there in the first inning and they got no runners across?
Unbelievable. Bases loaded, two down after two hits by the White Sox, and Grandal takes a 3-2 curveball directly over the plate.
But if you want to look on the positive side, you could say that first inning worked for this lineup. You got a couple of hits and a walk, and you had Moncada and Grandal in situations where... You could have done something. And
yeah, and you had Sheets and Grandal up there when Vaughn ends the inning on deck with the bases loaded.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's
I mean, if Manoah locks in, that might be your best chance to score.
Yeah, but they did get 20 pitches off of him, so that's good.
There's that.
One of our texters, it's now transitioned. Now there are textures, I think, Lawrence.
Sure.
I think he says the big window also kept everything quiet.
Yeah. Yeah, right. We hate Big Window.
Him on this show.
Absolute
this
worst.
This show absolutely hates him. Our textures are your textures. The listeners are listeners.
Busy show today, Lawrence. Willie Harris is going to be on the show in 20 minutes.
Sweet.
Yeah, can't wait for that. Obviously, White Sox World Series hero, Cubs third base coach. Then Antoine Walker.
Sweet.
At 3 o'clock. And then Boog Shambi at 3:40 today.
Also sweet.
ALS Day. Yeah, so fun guest list and Cubs, Sox, and much, much more to get into as well.
Have yourselves a show, boys. I will talk to you on Monday.
All right, Lawrence, have a good one. Yep, Cubs day game tomorrow. Tanny's Open kicks us off. It's Parkinson Spiegel on the Score.